A moment before I mute things. Welcome, everyone. Another one of our deep breathing workshops, and I'm really happy to have everyone joining me for these because it's one of those things that we have under our control that we can do for ourselves, which is to emphasize healthy actions and practices. So when we're here and working together and practicing even the most simple of breathing techniques, we're doing something that emphasizes our health. So if you have your handout for today and want to refer to that, that's great. If you didn't want to print it out or you don't have it available to you, it's there for your reference. It's there to give you further information to help you maybe figure out some questions that you want to ask as we go through things. And remembering, you're welcome to make comments. If things get noisy, I tend to get us into a mute function so that our background noise does not overwhelm the continuity of the presentation. But you're welcome to make comments and unmute as you need. But another feature is that if you want to make a comment and you don't want to interrupt the flow, you can leave a little chat message, and I always review those at the end to answer any specific questions that you have. So I see that that we do have a bunch of us joining now, and so let's get started with the information. Today's topic is a fairly interesting one. And I like the pranayama topics that are a little unusual because they spark interest. They might be the thing, the action, the practice that truly does bring us in to a practice, and that's what it's going to take for us to develop our skills. Today we're going to be talking about bellows breath as well as what is commonly referred to breath of fire or a shining skull. These are interesting ones. They do tend to be used in a way of creating a very rapid breath, but today we're going to go through and understand that there are levels of this this activity that are very easy for us as beginners to get started with. So, no worries there if you're thinking, oh, this is an advanced practice. All these practices can be taken up to their advanced levels, and all of these practices also have a level that's very gentle and easy to get started with. All right. Well, let's do a little bit of some basic practice right now. And so we're going to start with basic breathing. And so if you'll get into a comfortable posture, and that could be seated or reclined, whatever that posture would be for you, find yourself in a comfortable posture. And we're just going to review some of the basic breathing techniques. And the first one is that belly breath. So if you want to place a hand right over your abdominal region, just have the chest gently uplifted. And during your next inhale, work to move your belly outward with the inhaled breath. Just feel the pressure on your hand increase slightly. And then with your exhale, just release it very slowly, and you'll feel the pressure on your hand reducing slightly. So taking deep inhales and slow exhales. So over and over again, inhaling and exhaling. And that's the belly breath. It's simply telling us to use this muscle that's located between the rib cage and the internal organ area called the diaphragm muscle. And so we just breathe with that. But that's only one of many different respiratory muscles we have. And in order to engage the others, we sort of want to turn off this belly breath. And we're going to be using next these muscles that are in the rib cage itself. And so I want you to, as you exhale now, preemptively tighten your belly and try and breathe in so that the sides of your chest seem to be swelling outward. So it feels like you're getting bigger right here, and then exhale. And we'll do that again. We'll breathe in as if we're trying to just fill up the sides of our chest. And exhale slowly. All right, so that's the intercostal muscle breath. Now in the bottom part of our rib cage and back, and in the shoulder blade area of our rib cage, we've also got some respiratory muscles. And so we're, again, after this exhale, we're gonna tighten up the belly and breathe in to the lower and upper back. Try and spread the back of the chest open. And then exhale slowly. And again, we tighten the belly, inhaling to the back of the chest, and exhaling slowly. And now there's another breath, and this is the one we do unconsciously. It's right here in the collarbone area. And it uses the muscles that connect this collarbone structure to the neck. And so for that breath, we're going to breathe in as if we're lifting up our collarbones. So again, tightness of the belly, and we inhale, collarbone lift. It might be a shallow breath. Might not be able to bring it in very deeply. So there are four basic areas, although a lot of different ways to describe it, but we're going to say that there's the belly breath, the side of the chest, the back, lower and upper, and the collarbones is defined as our four-part breath. So let's do all of those parts together in the same breath. We'll start with a complete exhale, and in the same breath, we start it in the belly, and as that seems to be getting full, we bring it also into our sides, our lower back, our shoulder blades, and finish off taking sips into the collarbone. You should feel pretty big with air. And then exhale very, very, very slowly. And then you can do another one. Into the belly and sides, into the lower and upper back, into the collarbones. Fill, 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 fill. And then exhale very slowly. That's a fairly simple technique, and it's a part and parcel of almost every other pranayama technique, is that we be able to expand into our lungs, we be able to use our respiratory muscles more fully and more consciously than our normal unconscious breath. And so that's one of the key things that we're trying to do with our training, is inviting ourselves to create conscious breathing instead of just this unconscious way of breathing. How's everybody feeling with that? Doing okay? Yeah? Great. All right. Now, of course, the posture of our body matters, and it's going to matter pretty much, and I'll have you in very particular postures with some of the breathing techniques. And in fact, It's the postural positions that could cause us, you know, to collapse or be in a position that would create strain. And so do be attentive to the posture. But I've said before, it's perfectly okay in many of the breathing techniques to be in something other than a seated position. You can be reclined on your back or on your side. It will give you more access to respiratory muscles. And there's even techniques that have you reclined on your stomach, although for many people that makes things a little tense in their neck region. But to be able to expand more fully the back by not resting on it is one of the things they've discovered in treating people who have coronavirus, that they're more able to fully inflate their lungs when they breathe more fully into the back of their chest. Now, there was a wonderful request after last session that I talk more about some of the traditional benefits, the contraindications, as well as, you know, my addition was to say, well, what are the scientific studies? So let's take a look on page number 2, and if you don't have it in front of you, I'll be talking you through it. And basically, what I've done is I've created a little chart for us that talks about traditional effects. And these would be the effects that I've listed as testimonial. These are the effects that people have said, I feel that this does such. In this situation, I noticed this. And testimonial can be very good information, but it's not exactly the same as the kind of data that we get from scientific studies. So scientific studies means that it's replicable information, that we could do this study and produce this result, and we feel that if another study was done, we would reproduce similar results. And so I've divided the information into that, because a person could say that that something, it happened to them, and it might very well be true, but it might not be something that could be replicated by somebody else. There could have been another reason that they discovered that happened. And so I want to make, you know, rather clear the difference between what we have studied. And that doesn't mean that the testimonial information is false. It just means that we have not yet reproduced it in a study that had some parameters defined with the studies that I used were those that had the study group one or two, as well as control group, where these things weren't being done. And even though some of these were very small, I've listed, and it makes it fairly easy for you to look them up in your PDF. You can actually have a clickable link to those studies so that you can go directly to the sites that list those in case you want to read the actual study. So let's talk about the first few breathing techniques that we went over, the belly breath, the pausing breath, as well as even the ujjayi breathing, sound breathing. Although you might be able to find very specific references to traditional effects or something that somebody's saying that absolutely does this, mostly these are known for creating effects of balancing the mind. A lot of them are talking about weight loss, stress reduction, enhancing the function of the lungs, and enhancing mental clarity. And so that would be sort of in general, almost all pranayama techniques would have that list of traditional effects. These are simple things. And indeed, when we look to find some scientific studies that support this, that we found, I did find one, and again, these are not all the studies out there. These are just the ones that I was able to slowly filter through. So cardiovascular and respiratory effect of yogic slow breathing in the yogi beginner. What's the best approach? And this study was saying the best approach, if you're just beginning, was slow, deep breathing with equal inhale versus exhale. And so that's rather interesting. It was showing that there was definitely some cardiovascular and respiratory positive effects, and it was talking about what beginners could get the most out of was a very slow, deep breath, equal inhale, equal exhale. And that study talked about that. And so that's rather nice. So that is supporting that there is some positive information about that. And so, okay, very good. Now, are there contraindications with these first simple things? And you'll notice if you're looking at the chart, I'm talking that there's practically no contraindication to the actions of pranayama techniques if we use them gently. And then I go into a greater description on the next page, and so I'll talk about that. So we're saying that for these, so far, there's no strong contraindications. These are, if you're being gentle with it and using it, you're not going to have a reason to avoid it. And then further, there's a rather interesting one. And when I first ran across this, I thought, oh boy, I found something about alternate nostril breathing, and I thought this seems to be some information that was considered, again, more testimonial. It seems like this is what I had heard about it too in going through my pranayama studies, is that there was some difference that if you inhaled through one nostril versus the other, that it created changes in the brain. And so I set about saying, okay, you know, what was the statement here? So the testimonial statement says inhaling through the left nostril triggers the rest relaxation response parasympathetic nervous system, and inhaling through the right nostril stimulates the fight or flight response sympathetic nervous system. And I said, okay, they're not going to be able to find a study that proved that. But lo and behold, I found a study that studied just that. So short-term practice of less LBN, left nostril breathing, improves vagal tone, and that's the parasympathetic, and then practice of right nostril breathing increases sympathetic, that's fight or flight. And so there was actually a study. Now, it doesn't, you know, guarantee that that's going on, but there was actually a study that showed that there was some change going on, much like what was traditionally stated. So that was exciting. But there was also an effect of alternate nostril breathing on enhancement of memory, and also on brain hemodynamics, the action of blood supply to the brain. The alternate nostril breathing on memory was rather specific, that if you were the breathing on one side caused the change on the opposite side of the brain. In fact, it was focused into the area of the prefrontal cortex, which is associated with memory. And so it's like, well, that's rather interesting, that if we did alternate nostril breathing, we're breathing through one side, breathing through the left is going to calm you down, breathing through the right is going to lift you up, you know, excite you, or potentially make you a little more upset or anxious. And that the one about the change of blood supply, they're saying that perhaps this can be used for those who have had brain issues or injuries to stimulate more blood supply to one side of the brain versus the other, just by focusing on which nostril was being breathed through. So they notice that there's some differences with that. And I was, again, it was a little surprising to me to find that that there were studies of this nature, and that there were some actual results of that. So that's rather interesting as well. And so, though, as I said, those are listed for you to look up and see those results on your own. Now, prolonged breath, the anuloma and the praluloma, the prolonged inhale or the prolonged exhale. There was the statement is that prolonging the inhale stimulates the fight or flight system, and prolonging the exhale stimulates the relaxation, the parasympathetic system. So that's the testimonial, that's the statement, the traditional concept of it. And I couldn't find any specific study that said that the nervous system was affected. However, I did find one study that during deep inhale, there's an increase of the heart rate, and during deep exhale, there's a decrease of the heart rate. And so because there's a change in the heart rate, now part of it, when you're inhaling, you're putting a little bit, you're actually filling up, and you're putting a little bit more pressure in the heart structure. And so that's one of the things that that increases that that action. And then the exhale decreasing, and then the loss of pressure from the exhale causes the heart rate to slow down. And it's a very slight. Maybe that does actually create stimulation of fight or flight during a prolonged inhale, and relaxation during a prolonged exhale. But as I said, there was no specific study on that, so I did find a difference, but nothing that could absolutely support it being something that affected the nervous system. And remember, these things are happening when we're breathing normally too, so inhaling, our heartbeat is being changed versus exhaling. Still, we're you know, at the level of contraindication, still, again, if we're doing these things gently and without stress to the body, there's typically no contraindications to them. We get to lion's breath. That's what we did last time, the lovely face we made. It says that we relax and tone the facial muscles and reduce the stress. And I could not find any specific study on lion's breath itself. It doesn't mean they're not out there. It just meant that through my searches, I could not find any scientific study showing people doing that and associating a particular thing about it. It seems likely that it could create changes in the facial structure. So I'm not, you know, discounting it. And that does it reduce stress? Probably. So almost all the breathing techniques could reduce stress. And so we'll just say, well, there's no scientific studies that studied that. Now, the one we're studying today, bellows breath, Basrika and Kapalabhati, breath of fire, are also known as shiny skull. They are said to increase prana, which is life force energy. They're said to energize the body and to clear the mind. They're said to help with weight loss and great for reducing abdominal obesity. So it's like, whoa, yeah, okay, let me add those, right? I located several studies, 2 months combined practice of the bellows breath in obese individuals showed minimal changes in waist-hip ratio and BMI. So there's actually something that's saying, no, we're not finding this. In fact, I found several studies. One of them was touting and saying, yes, indeed, it made a change. But when I looked over, and this is why you got to read those studies, when I looked over the studies, it was like 0.04, you know, millimeters, just a tiny, a fraction, a little bitty bit of change. And they were touting that. It's like, yeah, it was different than the control group, true, but it was such an insubstantial change. And remember, some of these, they're doing the breathing practices for an hour a day in order to create these study changes. And so that's a lot of time. Now, I'm not saying it's an hour in a row. It could be divided because the studies didn't tell me the specificity of the practice. Were they practicing for a full hour all at once, or was it 20 minutes, times a day? It didn't say that. And that's something that when you're rating studies, you got to know that kind of information. And it could matter. If you did an hour's worth of practice all at once, you might have a completely different outcome versus doing little bits of it throughout the day. So that's something about these studies that we need to know as well. But here's a contraindication for the bellows breath and the Kapalabhati. You avoid it if pregnant or suffering from high blood pressure or heart issues. Now, these would be things that would be untreated. Avoid if you have glaucoma or nasal issues or other respiratory issues. Avoid if recent surgery, best not done right after a meal. Now, these contraindications are associated with the more fearsome practice of it, because I'm going to tell you today what I have planned for us. We're not going to be hard or harsh. It just says that some in this practice would do it at such an intensity that it could be problematic for these. And we know that the same would be if you're prolonging the breath or doing the pausing breath. If you're doing this in a way that stresses the body, some of these contraindications become very clear too. And although we're not doing it this time, next time we'll be doing curled tongue, Sitali. This practice cools the body, and I couldn't find any specific study that said that. And again, practically no contraindication to that. So hopefully this information is helpful to you, letting us know what are some of the things. Again, when you go through, if you're searching to find benefits and effects, there are tremendous numbers of benefits and effects that are assigned to many of these breathing practices. But you know what? A lot of the studies I found did not separate the pranayama itself from the yoga that was also being done. And so because of that, I said, well, what's causing the effect of weight loss? If I couldn't find a study that was specific to the pranayama, I didn't include it. And I would say that, well, it's probably part and parcel of it, but we can't say that done alone by itself that the pranayama is going to have some of the stronger testimonial information that's out there. Now, I want to go a little bit more in depth with some of the contraindications, because I said practically none on most of these. And again, there are practically no negative consequences if we are being gentle. And regardless of our physical condition, basic breathing techniques can be done. But it's also important to understand duration and exertion is part of the practice. And so we've got to keep a few things in mind. One of the common things that happens when a person gets overly involved is they begin to overbreathe or hyperventilate. And that state is a very unpleasant one. It can lead to state feelings of anxiety, lightheadedness, the mouth, around the mouth might tingle. If we don't stop overbreathing, it definitely is going to make us feel bad and may even cause us to faint. That's hyperventilation, not just pranayama itself. All we really have to do if we begin to feel that we're overbreathing is just return to our normal state of breathing. If we really were to hyperventilate, which is very unlikely in a pranayama practice, we could breathe into that classic breathe into a paper sack, and it will calm everything back down again. So I would say that as long as you're breathing in a normal way, if you begin to feel at all odd, then just go back to your regular breathing practice. In fact, I would say that that is the best thing to do. If we're just breathing and we're not feeling odd, do the breathing practice for a little bit and then pause. Give yourself a chance to sort of reset, see how you feel, and then go on with it. Another thing I wanted to specifically caution you on is that holding the breath for prolonged times or creating physical exertion while you're holding the breath can cause lightheadedness and raise blood pressure. You know, that's one of the things that we experience when we're wearing those masks. If you're wearing a mask and it's actually doing a pretty good job of blocking particulate matter, it's going to reduce the amount of oxygen carbon dioxide exchange. And if you do physical exertion while wearing a mask, you're going to start to feel like, whoa, getting out of breath here. Okay. Same with holding your breath, doing physical exertion. I don't recommend it. It's not necessary. It doesn't actually help us in our breathing techniques. There are breath holding techniques. We don't want to do those when we're performing physical poses. Okay. So that, you know, again, and if you're doing a lot of exercise, you probably should not be wearing one, especially one of those, you know, very restrictive masks, because for the same reason, it's going to restrict your airflow too much. We don't want to strain the throat. We do not want to make the ujjayi, the sound breathing, or the lion's breath in such a way that makes us grip our throat. They don't need forceful actions. All right, so we're not trying to make a forceful sound or an action that would cause us to grip. And in regards to holding the breath, all we're doing is pausing the breath. We're just not inhaling or exhaling at that moment. We're not gripping the throat or trying to exclude things. And we're not trying to get ourselves into a state where we're feeling stressed or strained as we're going through our practices. We can do more advanced forms of pranayama as long as we're adding to the duration and the intensity slowly and methodically. It's sort of like, you know, weight training. You're training muscles. That's what you're doing. You're training lung tissue. You're training your body, and it takes time. Practice does not need to be strained in order to produce positive results. It just needs to be persistent and consistent. If we practice persistently over the course of weeks to months, we're going to notice a big change in both the volume of air that we can bring in, the amount of time that we are in the duration of the inhale, the amount of time we're in the duration of the exhale, the comfortable pausing between breaths because we're becoming, you know, positively oxygenated. We won't feel stressed or uncomfortable if we're practicing and, you know, going up that slope in a very appropriate way. And so if you know, in the situation when we're pausing the breath, again, I already mentioned we don't grip the throat. If you want to breathe in, breathe in. If you want to breathe out, breathe out. We're trying to create a state where the desire to breathe in or out is what we're controlling. We're not restricting our body's needs. We're not saying, oh gosh, I really wish I could inhale. Well, my goodness, go ahead and inhale. You know, that's not what pranayama is about. It's about things that are done that have the body in a relaxed and calm state. And so it's a practice of mindfulness. We are becoming aware of our breathing and our respiratory muscles and our heart rate and the tension that we might feel in our body. And so this is our consciousness. That's what we're trying to create a change in mostly. All right. Are there any questions or comments about that anybody wants to have me further address before we get into our practice?
Julie, thank you so much for working up that chart.
You're welcome. It's one of those things that, you know, I want everyone to have maximum amount of information. Knowledge is our best defense, and it's the thing that helps us make the greatest gain. So when we are doing these things, I'm going to, you know, my job is to try and give you as much information as possible. So let's, if there's no further questions or comments at the moment, I don't want to run out of time today. Let's go ahead and get involved with some of our basic practices. I'll mute everyone again. And let's see, yes. Oh, there's new controls in Zoom now. I have to figure out everything again. It's like, what? All right. We're going to do some basic breathing practices. And I like these. These are great because we're going to make some noise. All right. When we're creating a sound when we exhale, we're doing something that's going to be vibrating our throat. And this creates a feedback. There's portions of what's the vagus nerve. Now, the vagus is a cranial nerve. And it has an auditory portion, and it has a portion that comes through the structure of the neck, and it has a portion that crosses over our diaphragm. So deep breathing creates a mild stimulation into that vagus nerve, and this produces relaxation within the structure of the body. But now we're going to be creating a noise in our throat, which is going to vibrate the throat a little bit and create that feedback into the vagus nerve. And we're also going to be hearing the sound that we make for ourselves. And so that's going to create in the auditory portion of the vagus nerve this deep sort of humming noise that we're going to be making. And that, in fact, is the first breathing techniques, Brahmari humming. And so this one is done typically from a seated position, but I don't see why you couldn't do it from a reclined position if you want. We are going to be taking our fingers and placing them over the ears. This is not to obstruct all sound. It's just to emphasize what we're hearing. And it's a very simple thing. We're going to be inhaling, and then we're going to be making a humming sound as we exhale. You will still be able to exhale through the nose, but you know, if you want to hum out through your mouth, it's okay to do that as well. So let's get our comfortable position, and let's place the fingers over the ears, and let's take in a nice deep inhale. And then as we begin the exhale, let's start to hum. When you finish that, you inhale again, and you hum some more. I see a dog going for someone. It's definitely going to be calling to our little pets. There we go. And so you repeat that for several cycles. You just inhale as you normally would. And then you make the hum. And when you get tired of doing that, you just relax. Now notice, after several cycles of that, how do you feel? There's just a little bit extra with that. There's, you know, we're not trying to produce an extremely prolonged inhale. We're not trying to produce an extremely prolonged exhale. We may notice that that the changes in tone, that our hum isn't, you know, perfectly solid. But it may have a way of allowing us to relax a little bit more. It may have a way of delighting us, because there we are, we're humming while we do it. Okay. Now, that's one, but there's another method, and it's very similar. It's basically, we're just going to change the sound of what we make. So this is going to be Om chanting, and Om is spelled different ways, O-H-M or A-U-M. It's just a noise. So right now, before we do it, I invite you to create the sound known as Om. And so just take a breath in, and just make that noise. It's just like you're saying that word. You can do it with your mouth closed. You can do it saying it through your mouth. You may have been in a group where you have practiced the Om chanting before, but it serves the same purpose as the humming. It's just got a word associated with it. So let's get comfortable and let's see if we can create that sound of Om. And for this, just so that we can hear it, because it's sometimes interesting for us all to hear each other, I'm going to unmute everyone just for a moment so that we can sort of hear all of the Om noises we're about to make, because that's kind of fun. All right?
I mean, enjoying that part of this.
All right, let me mute that one, but there we go. All right, so take a deep breath in, and when you're ready, let's make our Om. Om. Let's do it again, another cycle. Two more times. exhale, notice how you feel. How do you feel? So maybe that's a little different. Yeah. Are there any comments on that? Anything that you notice? I'm going to hit global because I hear my voice reverberating. But if you want to make a comment, just go ahead and unmute yourself. How'd that feel? Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It's a little different. It's more of an active kind of breathing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very centering, relaxing.
Excellent. And one of the things we're trying to do is we're trying to invite our mind to get into this, for us not to be out there, thinking about other things. We're trying to be in the moment with ourselves. And I tell you, making a noise with our little voice box there is going to concentrate us. It's going to get us in here, right? And it's, again, delightful to our pets. So, there's an added bonus with that. All right. So those are some simple things. And as I said, one of the reasons I'm having us go through these, even though, as I say, we touch on them very lightly, is so that we can have a chance to explore them and find the ones that just chime with us. They work better for us because they're more interesting to us, or they're exciting for us, or they give us an effect. We're like, I like that one. I like the way I felt with that one. Those are the ones to focus on first. Now, before we go into our final practice of the day, I'll just quickly go through the portion that's the anatomy of breathing. And this is talking about lung problems, because I find that for many people, we've heard of these things, but we've never had them defined for us. It includes asthma, bronchitis, COPD, cystic fibrosis, lung cancer, pleurisy, and pneumonia. And these are not all of the lung issues that are out there, by means. But asthma is just an inflammatory disease of the lung. There's an obstruction to the airflow, and there's also spasms of the tubes, the bronchial tubes of this. And we might have wheezing or coughing or chest tightness, shortness of breath, and it gets triggered by pollution and allergies a lot of times. And some people have had it since childhood, and it's a serious thing that could be life-threatening. Other people, it's something that they develop as in an adult. And so asthma is one of those things that creates an obstruction, typically with the ability to fully refresh the lungs with fresh air. Now, bronchitis is another inflammation, but this is an inflammation of the actual bronchial tubes that carries the air into the lungs. And we might have experienced this as a result of having a cold or a flu, that we had a time when we were having a lot of coughing or wheezing, shortness of breath, chest pain. We might even refer to this as an upper respiratory infection or a chest cold. That would be bronchitis. Now, COPD stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and it includes emphysema, chronic bronchitis, and chronic asthma. In fact, I think that anymore the term emphysema is being displaced and COPD is being used instead. This is something that typically worsens over time, shortness of breath and a more productive cough. And smoking is one of the common causes of COPD. But as we said, chronic bronchitis, those with chronic asthma might also develop this as a steadily worsening type of outcome. Now, cystic fibrosis is a genetic disorder, so that means that it's not something we acquire, it's something that we're born with, and it affects the lungs, and it's an overproduction of mucus, not just in the lungs, but that's one of its primary areas. And there's a lot of difficulty breathing and a productive cough, and just as I said, too much mucus coming into the lung space. Lung cancer is uncontrolled cell growth of tissues in the lungs, and it can be primary, meaning that the malignancy develops in the lung itself, but it's also a very common area for the metastasis of cancers that travel from one area and into the tissues of the lung. The major majority of lung cancers, especially the primary ones, are due to long-term tobacco smoking, and the symptoms include coughing, weight loss, shortness of breath, and chest pain. And then we've got what's called pleurisy, and that's the inflammation of not the lung itself, but the membrane that surrounds the lungs and lines the chest cavity. And it's commonly caused by a viral infection, and its symptoms include shortness of breath, cough, fever, weight loss, and pain too within the lung structure. And then we've got pneumonia. That's an inflammatory condition of the lung that affects the air sacs, the actual terminal ends of the bronchial tubes, or these little grape-like clusters called alveoli. And it's caused by a viral or bacterial infection. And those who have COPD, cystic fibrosis, asthma, or heart issues, or weakened immune systems, are more vulnerable to pneumonia. And the symptoms include fatigue and coughing and chest pain, fever and difficulty breathing. And so if we had any of these particular conditions, these would be some of the conditions that we would want to be very careful with if we're associating a virus that attacks the lungs. Anybody with these particular types of conditions or history of this type of thing would need to be very careful, because these pre-existing type of conditions are some of the ones that would cause us to have a more significant or serious outcome. So that's just a brief explanation of these things so we can get an idea. And you can see, since most of them involve things like, problems of coughing and chest tightening, not everybody who coughs has coronavirus. They might have another issue going on with that, but indeed, that gives us just a little bit more background. Now, in for today, our final time, we're going to be doing the Kapalabhati, the breath of fire, also known as Shiny Skin. And the thing about breath of fire, it gets Kapalabhati gets referred to it, as well as the Bhasrika, the bellows breath. They both get referred to as breath of fire, and you'll find equal amounts of them. And I would say, who's right, who's wrong? No, they're both right. They're both a breathing technique that could be thought of as a breath of fire. Although I think that the Kapalabhati gets called that more than the bellows breath in certain things. Shining skull sounds pretty weird, but the idea is that it's purifying, it's cleansing you to do this. Now, these are often associated with extremes, and we see people doing them at a more advanced state, but there is a beginning level of all of these. And so even if you have practiced these before, I want you to focus right now on just the more gentle and beginning levels. And these are done from a seated position, because we had to have this this rib cage area uplifted, and they're not done with any stress or strain. In fact, there's no stress or strain in our face, in our neck, or our shoulders, or any other part of our body. We are uplifted in wonderful posture, and we're not going to experience any stress or strain. Now, when we do this, it's hard not to get a little engaged with it, but we're going to be creating, in this first one, the Kapalabhati, we're going to be creating what is known as an active exhale and a passive inhale. Now, the active exhale is going to be done with the engagement of a very particular muscle group that pulls the belly inward. And so just before we even begin this, I just want you to put your hand on your belly, keeping your throat open. I want you to go, just make that belly, you can just see it right here. I'm just pulling it inward. It's like we're just going to go, right? Just like that, but no stress and no strain. So see if you can do that. Can you make a sound or an action that's just, Now, the following the your body would naturally rebound that belly outward, and that would pull a little bit of air in. All right, so it's going to be something that we do for several little pulses, and then we're going to relax, and then we can do several more little pulses. Typically, you do about 10 repetitions, and then you go back to your normal deep breathing, okay? We're not gonna do it very fast at first. With practice, the speed of the exhales become faster. So let's get comfortable, make sure our shoulders are relaxed, and I want us to do a couple of just regular inhales and exhales first. So inhale very deeply and fully. Exhale nice and full. And the next inhale, as we inhale very easily, we're going to be pulling in the abdomen. Let's start. And then relax. Now, that may or may not have worked for you. You can exhale through the nose, or if you find it is problematic to exhale through the nose, You can exhale through the mouth, but try it through the nose. Now, if you're feeling any distress or anything, stop, just go to breathing deeply. Try again for just one or two pulses. So let's do, again, take a nice deep inhale. And then we'll begin. And then go back to normal breathing. Now, like I say, if you've seen this done before, it's done vigorously. It's done quickly. It's done fire-like. But that's not necessary. Did you notice, and you can let me know, and you can turn yourself off of mute if you want. Did you notice that you were sort of inhaling a little bit? Maybe a little? So there's, as I said, that rebound. When the belly goes in, it's pulled out. And remember, we breathe because we create space. So by creating this inward, sudden inward, there's all of a sudden a space rebounded backward, and it pulls back in sort of an equal amount of breath. Now, it doesn't mean that we can do it forever like that. So we're not trying to do a tremendous number of breaths like this. But let's try a couple more with this before we move on to the bellows breath. All right, so let's take a nice and deep inhale. You can put your hand right there if you like, and then it's. And then you relax. So we're just relatively unaware. We're not trying to draw in that deep air. It's more than just exhaling. Because there's a little boom, 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 going back and forth. Now, when you practice that for weeks, then you increase the speed of it, but there's never any stress or strain. If you start feeling that your face is contorting, your shoulders are hiking up, your body is moving violently, that is no longer pranayama. I'm not sure what it is, but that is not this Kapalabhati breath of fire. And I know you can see people doing stuff like this on the internet, okay? So you will see plenty of people that are doing really extreme things, but then again, people do extreme things on video, on the internet. We can watch videos of those day in, day out. So we're not trying to turn this into something that becomes a problem and needs contraindication. So that level of it can be done by all of us. And as we gradually increase our awareness, we can do it with a little bit more vigor, but it's never going to be something that makes us feel like we're hyperventilating. It's never going to be something that makes us feel like we're creating stress or strain. All right? And your level could be different than what I'm doing right now, and that's fine. But same thing apply. Check yourself out. Make sure that at your level, the speed that you're doing, the actions that you're doing, the number of cycles of repetition that you're doing, that you're not ending up with tension anywhere in your body. Okay? So that's what we're trying to do. Okay. Now, let's look at bellows breath. Now, bellows breath is rather interesting because it's going to be involving a movement of our arms, which means that in situations where we might have a shoulder issue, we wouldn't choose to do the bellows breath because our arms would be need to use it. And here's what it's going to do. The action of, I'm just showing with one arm right now, the action of raising the arm up and bringing the arm down actually creates a change within the structure of the rib cage. So just do it on one side. Arm goes up, arm goes down. We make a nice little soft fist. Arm goes up, arm goes down. Now when the arm goes up, it's pulling the ribs in one direction. Going down, it's sort of compressing the rib cage. Let's try the other side. Arm goes up, arm goes down. Arm goes up, arm goes down. All right, so we're just finding out, okay, yeah. So we're gonna be making that kind of movement. And we're gonna be doing it kind of like that with no stress or strain in our neck or our shoulders. All right. Now this one, it says it should not be practiced as the sinuses are blocked. Although I've read references that said, oh no, by all means, you should be practicing this one with your sinuses blocked. And I'm like, okay, no, seriously, if you can't easily inhale or exhale through your nose and you're going to do something that's going to create an action that's sort of forcing that, you definitely want to watch out for this. It's not recommended for those with weak constitutions, poor lung capacity, high blood pressure, high arrogant nose. That would be if we're doing it in an extreme way. So if you're basically healthy and you don't have anything that's significantly bothering you, then you would do that. But definitely if you have some shoulder issues or neck issues that are irritated by that movement, than not. Now let's try both arms together before we do it. So the arms are going to go up and the arms are going to go down. So it's just up, down, up, down. That's, and you're, and you shouldn't feel that this is straining. This is not straining you. And that's the movement of a bellows. That's how it gets its name, bellows breath, okay? Now, it's recommended that we close a fist, and it's also recommended that we close our eyes with this, but you can keep your eyes open if you prefer. We're basically going to be inhaling through the nose as we lift the arms up. That's going to be drawing in, and exhaling as we let the arms come down. Now we're going to do it for about 10 breaths in a row, okay? And just like we do with all these things, we're just going to breathe in nice and deep and then exhale completely. And now we're going to inhale. And then tuck your chin gently and breathe normally. And then relax a moment. Now, it leads you into a pretty easy movement with those arms. You can, of course, it can be a little more forceful, but it's never anything extreme. It's using the natural movements of the arm to gain a little more access into the muscle structures that displace the movement of the rib cage in an up and down fashion, okay? So it's simply aiding and abetting us breathing in and breathing out. But, hey, wanna try it again? Let's try it again. All right, so we're gonna exhale completely, get our little hands in our nice little bellows position, and inhale. At the end, you just sort of tuck the chin lightly and breathe normally. And so it's a more rapid breathing rate than we've been doing. So that tucking of the chin and the slowness of the rate following that breath is actually one of the things that it's concentrating on. Let's do another cycle. If you're comfortable, after exhaling completely, we'll begin. And tuck, and just breathe normally. All right, how you feeling? Yeah, a little energized perhaps with that one because we got a little more oxygen coming in. Got something to do with those arms. Nice and, saucy way. So that might also assist us with this. Now before we run out of time, I want to show you something that is from yoga. And we'll go a little longer and talk here at the end. But it's called the Revolved Rabbit, and it is the yoga to enhance the breath. And basically what it is a stretch for the rib cage. Now I'm going to show it from seated in the chair position, and then I'm going to show it in the kneeling position the way it's described in your notes. So the chair is great for those who don't want to get down, if you have knee issues or other reasons. And it's just a very simple thing. We're going to be creating a bit of a forward fold. Now when you fold forward, of course the rib cage and the legs might collide. And so it's always okay to spread those knees out a little wider, all right? The idea of the revolved rabbit is to create a little bit of compression in the ribs and then to breathe into it. So in my fold forward, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take my right hand and bring it so that my arm is coming toward the left knee. I'm going to put my left hand down and I'm going to lift my left shoulder just a little bit. And in this position, I'm going to breathe into the belly nice. And exhale. And then I'll come out. I'm not doing anything strong or stressful. And then I'm going to, keeping this long spine, come over to this other side with my left hand to the right leg, with my right hand to the knee. I'm going to twist right shoulder above left. I'm going to breathe into the belly nice. And exhale. And then I'll come out of that. So it creates resistance. Now I'm going to come out of the chair and I'll show you the position as it's done on the floor. So we use a modified tabletop, child's pose. In this position, I come backward. I'm not going to go extremely deep. Again, knees could be narrow or knees could be wide. And I'll take, here comes my left hand toward the right knee. My right hand lifts the shoulder a little bit, and I take a deep breath. Exhale. I'll do it the other way. Here's my right hand coming across. My left hand lifting left shoulder. Inhale. Exhale. I'll take it a little deeper. You can have toes up or toes down, by the way, for those who prefer. I'm going to take my arm. See, the cross right here would be if I'm tighter. But the idea is I'm trying to get my arm more and more across, and I'm using a little bit of leverage, and then taking that breath, and then arm coming further across, using a little bit of leverage, and then taking the breath. And so those actions, rather simple. They create compression, they create resistance. It's just a simple pose, but it can be done in the chair to create that same resistance, that twist, that ability for us to create some strengthening of our respiratory muscles. All right, now I'm going to make a little change on our sound-making abilities here. So you're all unmuted. I see we had a chat. There says that particular breath is hard, and I'm not sure, Lizette, which particular breath you were
referring to. The one who made the noise.
Oh, okay, the humming breath or the om. You know, at first, it is a little difficult because we're not used to creating that kind of control, and we sometimes don't know how to slow down that exhale. And so, you know, difficult and awkward are very acceptable things as long as we're not feeling stressed out about it, as long as we're not feeling
okay.
Unpleasant sensations. So for something to be awkward, hard to control, I would expect that that would be many of our breathing techniques. So let me ask you, are there any specific questions that you have or comments that you have or desires for more? Remember, I do absolutely not only respond to you right now, but I also try and incorporate your questions, your desires into these workshops. So if you have something you think, I'd like to, you know, and just fill in the blank, I will do my best to make that a reality for you. How's everybody feel? How do you feel right now?
Really good. Thank you, Julie.
Yeah, no, I like those breathing exercises.
Yeah, today was a little bit exciting. We did a little boom, boom, boom with our belly and a little arm thing.
Yeah,
so,
I like that one.
I like the physical.
Right. Remember these, you know, my point here is not to train us to an extremes in pranayama. My point here is to get us all involved in some breathing techniques that we can begin to use. Remember, your practice is something that you are questing after daily practice. How can I get myself to create a daily habit of any breathing technique, of anything that would begin to deepen my breath, begin to create that mind of body conscious reality? Because that's what is the benefit. It is the gentle practice done day after day, and then that becomes our weeks, and then that becomes our months, and that becomes our habit of breathing that makes us strong and makes lung structure that's vital and it's pliable and it's ready. So, all right.
Wonderful, Julie. Thank
you
so
work,
much.
Everyone. Thanks for joining me today. We definitely have some classes. Just because I don't have on this notes, you know, what's happening after, you know, part 7 doesn't mean there won't be a part 8, okay? So we'll continue on as long as there is some interest in this, and I will find new and exciting things. So have no fear. I'll just change up the
Well, you know, I never dreamed breathing would have so many different ways to do it.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, there are many, many different breathing techniques out there from the, you know, from pranayama, and you know, some of them I'm excluding just because that's a little weird, and some of them because they're more advanced and they're more difficult for us to use as beginners. But then there's all sorts of other breathing things that don't have any associations with the depth of traditions as some of the pranayamas do, that they're still out there. And so we will happily play with this and practice with this as well. So excellent. All right. Good to see you all. I'm again very grateful for y'all being here, and I look forward to seeing you again too. So if there's some extra question you need to ask me, and we don't cover it right now, feel free to call me, text me, email me, or in other ways, let me know. Okay.
Excellent. Thank you, Julie.
You're welcome. Have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks, Julie.
Bye-bye now.
See you Saturday.